Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Welcome in, everyone, to Gramlich and McLean. We're so excited that you're joining us today on this Monday to recap the weekend that was in ACC sports. And I wish you guys could see what happens right before we go on air, because Mac and I are always laughing right before we head on air. So, Mac, I'm assuming that you are doing well, my friend.
Long weekend, but a great weekend. And it's so funny. I know y'all are sick of me saying this, but it seems like every weekend I go in with expectations like, oh, it's going to be a boring weekend. And then it's a great weekend and it's fantastic game. So I just want to reiterate, this will be the last time, maybe, probably not. But we should be so thankful and grateful that we have games to watch. The Masters just happened yesterday. What an amazing performance that was, just to have sports and what sports means to us as a society. It brings people together like nothing else can. And I'm just grateful that we're going to do a podcast on Monday and talk about it.
Max, so did Spieth win?
Spieth actually did not win. And I had a couple of friends that told me when I told them that that's who you pick, they kind of laughed and said, why did she pick them?
So here's what happened.
You know, air that out a little bit, because
yes,
it's actually a terrible
what had happened was, look, at least my guy didn't fall apart on whatever hole that
shoot a 10, that, shoot a 10 on three or Rom. Yeah. Golly.
Yeah, it was rough. Okay. Here's what happened. Just to be honest. So everyone, I know when I said Spieth, everyone was like, yikes, Kelly knows nothing about golf. What an idiot. So when Mac and I were recording that podcast, as I had mentioned, this is no excuse because I know you had a super long day on Saturday. I had a long day that day of all these different jobs. Again, our jobs are not hard. They're amazing, but it just was a long day. And I panicked. I wasn't expecting you to ask me who was going to win. So I panicked and I just thought of the first name that I knew. I mean, he's a Longhorn, and I was a huge fan of Spieth earlier when he was actually doing well and before he was yelling at his caddy all the time. But so I just panicked. But really, on my team for the radio station, I had Koepka and I had DeChambeau. And I had Francesco Molinari, who killed me. But I should have said Koepka or DeChambeau, the other guys I had on my team. And the way we did it on that team, too, is if you had picked someone earlier in the year, you couldn't take them. So I'd already picked DJ. I'd already picked John Rahm. I'd already picked some of these other guys. Anyway,
I understand.
That being said, I am not an idiot. I hope
no one thinks that. We believe you.
Even though Spieth played better on Sunday, he was doing really well, and then he collapsed again, classic. But he wasn't in the running because DJ destroyed everyone.
Typical, right? Typical. Hey, at least a guy from South Carolina wins it.
Yes, that was cool.
Best score ever. And I think that there's got to be an asterisk, right? This Masters was so different. The course itself was so different. I was talking to a great friend, Wesley Cook, and he was just saying, look, the grass is softer. The greens are different. When you hit the green, it doesn't roll off. It doesn't move. You know, it sits right there. So there's going to be an asterisk, and there's going to be greatest November score and then greatest normal score.
Right, right. But still, Dustin Johnson gets that green jacket, and no one can take it away
chance.
From him. So
that's not, this isn't the Heisman. Those guys aren't coming like they did for Reggie Bush. You keep that thing forever.
There you go. Okay, speaking of long days, Mac, again, long but amazing days. Let's be very clear. I never, ever want to be the one complaining about my sports media job. That would never be me or Mac. But Saturday, you got an opportunity to have a crazier day than normal. So walk the people through that.
Yeah, it was actually really wild. You know, kind of just flex my, you know, muscles in this industry and do something that is a little bit different. And I'm not sure if too many people have ever actually done it. So I got a call on late Thursday night saying, hey, you know, we've had something happen. Would you be available to call the Louisville versus Virginia? Excuse me. Louisville. I don't want to hurt any Cardinals fans.
Louisville.
The Louisville game at Virginia. And I was like, you know, I have this stuff and whatever. And they said, no, we talked to, you know, the bosses that be. And they said, as long as you do the morning show and the night show, you're good. And so I'm kind of thinking, it's going to be a long day, but let's do it. Why not? So I got up, I did the huddle, and then I drove to ESPN's campus, which is about 30 or so minutes away from me here in Charlotte, called the Louisville Virginia game remotely. So I'm in Charlotte. Chris Cotter, who was play-by-play, is in Atlanta, and we're calling a game in Charlottesville, which was just a very interesting, very strange process. But I thought it was cool, and it was a lot of fun just you know, cramming for those teams. And obviously enough, you know, we cover this conference so well, and our producers do a great job of making sure we hit every team each week. So it's not that I wasn't knowledgeable about either one, but you would like a little bit more, you know, prepared time to prepare going into a game where you can just get super familiar with the roster and just everybody. But it was plenty of time. I thought that we did a really great game. It turned out to be a fun game, a bunch of turnovers, a bunch of crazy plays that really up until the end was very competitive. And then I come back and we do the night show. And it
Take
was
the
just,
tie off.
Yeah, right. Ties are off. It's crazy. You never know what's going to be said. Ton of inside jokes in that show. So try to keep up if you can. But it was a lot of fun, a long day, but just something that, you know, it was like a marathon. I had phase one, phase two, and phase three to cap it off. And a really, really fun experience.
That's awesome, Mac. And that was your first ACC versus ACC game.
It was.
Like an ACC
was.
Team,
yep.
Right?
So I started in high school. I did that in August. And then I did the Wake Forest-Campbell game, which they went on to win four in a row, you know, after I called that game. So I take a lot of credit. And then I did, you know, the G5 game with Coastal and ranked Louisiana, which those two teams are playing really, really well right now. This was my first remote in opposite places and ACC versus ACC team. So it's funny how each game has been very different that I've done so far. So, you know, I'm prepared for anything. Next up, Rose Bowl, you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. You never know what to expect these days. I was doing my first studio or remote studio stuff this past week. And yeah, it's a whole different world. It's a whole different world, but it makes it a lot easier when you're working with people that you really like.
No
so it works out well. Mac, the AP poll is out. Mm. Before we get into our big three and recap that, number 2, Notre Dame, number 4, Clemson, number 12, Miami, and North Carolina still not ranked. What? I'm so confused. I thought for sure UNC would be ranked. Now, they are receiving the most votes by a landslide, but Tulsa is ranked above them. Okay. And Miami dropped from 9 to 12. So what was your reaction when you saw those two numbers?
I think it, you know, what it did is it, and I'm going to try to not be aggressive here, but aggression is going to
PG Mac.
Yeah, it's PG.
Grandma's listening.
Grandma, close your ears. I think it confirmed just how irrelevant the AP poll is, how these guys do not watch football. They look at the scorecards and then they place a vote. And at the end of the day, it's so annoying to think that this poll even matters anymore, that we talk about it. And it just so happens you're the only poll we can talk about right now. So we have to bring it up because I think it's going to have some influence on the college football playoff. Those people have to start from somewhere. And I would assume that they're going to use that as a basis. So, you know, maybe Kelly, we just start our own poll. You know, we're going to get some friends around the country who watch these games and really pay attention and, you know, not have 3-2 lost Big 12 teams in who have lost to the Sun Belt. No offense to the Sun Belt. You're doing well right now. But it blows my mind. And I think the fact that Miami was on the road, an underdog, and finds a way to win, and they move back 3 spots. It makes no sense. The fact that UNC's offense is just light years ahead of anybody else, so explosive, the best offense in the country, and you're not going to rank them? I don't get it. I don't understand it. And they were as high as 5. It's not like they're trying to break into it. They were the 5th team in the country. You put them there, and now you're not putting them back in. So, AP poll, I can't wait until we don't have to talk about you anymore because it's only a couple weeks away.
Yes, that's true. It's Thanksgiving week that we get our first college
and
football playoff rankings.
I don't have to talk about you. I
Look
hope
at
you
that.
Listen, AP
Look at Mac being thankful. Mac, I love it. I'm with you 100%. I support you. Because dropping Miami like that, I just felt was disrespectful. And not ranking UNC was also disrespectful.
And again, we're ACC homers. I get it. But let's just watch football. Okay. Come on.
Yeah. I would still say that. And I watched all of both of those games. And I get that UNC's defense is worrisome.
So is Florida's. Newsflash.
So is Florida's.
Okay.
And, like I said, give Wake some credit. Right. Wake's a good team. Exactly. Sam Hartman was on fire.
There needs
in the
to
first
be more
half.
Credit. And it just needs to be the same. What are we judging people by? It needs to be the same type of thing. And it doesn't feel fair when you do things the way that it's been done. But hey, I get it. Your time's ticking. You got one more week. Make the most of it.
Playoff poll soon. But AP poll, we're done with you.
I hope we get a letter. I hope we get a direct message. based off of it.
We should post this on Twitter and tag them. That would be really interesting. Okay, our big three, Mac. Let's get into our big three games and break down what the heck happened. Number two, Notre Dame defeats Boston College 45-31. Notre Dame turns the ball over three times, Mac. Three fumbles. Boston College only scored 6 points off of those three turnovers. I think that's the game in a little bit of a nutshell. I thought Ian Book looked tremendous again. Notre Dame just played well. They didn't really have that Clemson hangover a little bit early, but overall Notre Dame got the job.
Yeah, done. And that's a really crazy stat, Kelly. It'd be interesting to see if that pops back up in the show in an episode or two. But just looking at the game itself, you know, I thought that Ian Book, again, for the second consecutive week, looked like a different quarterback. And it's a little bit, you know, evolving. He's changing into kind of this, you know, final
where
point.
Has that been? Like, that's what I'm wondering about Notre Dame, Mac. Was Notre Dame really trying to be that vanilla until Clemson? Or is it a combination of that plus Ian Book just not gelling with his receivers yet? I'm just so confused where Ian Book has been.
You know, I think it is a combination of that. Now, do I think that they were, you know, running a vanilla scheme up until the, you know, seventh or eighth game of the season? Probably not. I think more so the gelling factor and not having a full spring with those guys and you know, developing while we're keeping score and when it means the most and coming together as a team when points are on the board. So I think that's what we're seeing a little bit, his confidence just growing and growing each game. Because again, have not seen this Ian Book that we have in the past two games and maybe even thrown in the Pitt game as well throughout this year. And that's what I expected to see. I expected to see a quarterback who is in his third year as a starter, fifth year in the program, to look like this. And he has escapability, the slipperiness. He is hard to tackle. And really, for any Clemson fans listening, it makes me flash back to 2011 Connor Shaw, a guy who could not be tackled and just could extend play so well. He hurts you with his legs. He hurts you with his arm. And just a better control of the offense and whole. Boston College, though, I think they solidified, hey, look, we're the real deal on offense, and we've got a really good quarterback who is growing, who's getting better and better each and every game. So I can't wait to see him next year. I said it earlier on the podcast in recent episodes. I think he's going to be a top 10 lock by the time he's done. He has all the intangibles. He has all the physical measurables. Now it's just production. Can production catch up all these things that we're looking at for him? And I think that surely will, because he's already over 2,000 yards and the touchdowns, the gaudy numbers, those will all come. So excited to see those guys. But you hit the nail on the head, Kelly, not being able to take advantage of three turnovers for touchdowns. You can't beat the number two team in the country. I'm sorry. You there's no chance.
There is no chance. And I thought Dracovic was impressive at times. Ian Book obviously outplayed him. And we talked about this, Mac. Whichever quarterback plays better, most likely that team is going to win. The first TD pass that Jerk threw, where he was falling down and his wide receiver adjusted, he threw the ball where only his wide receiver could get it if he adjusted. I was impressed with that. And that's something that impresses me about Jerk is I feel like his arm strength and just his strength in general is off the charts, because he can make throws when he's getting hit or falling down that some guys just
can't. And that's why you keep hearing us say that Big Ben, you know, kind of comparison. He looks just like him. And that's honestly where I think he can get to. He has all those skills, all those tools. It's just, are you going to put in the work? Which obviously, seeing him from being a guy sitting on the bench about to change positions at Notre Dame to then finding a new fire, transferring, being the guy at Boston College, the future is very bright for Phil Dracovic.
It is. And then moving forward for Notre Dame, look, bye week. Then you get a little rest, and then there's a tough stretch remaining for Notre Dame.
UNC up next. I can't wait to watch that game. Friday
UNC,
game
Syracuse.
After Thanksgiving. I mean, your defense, they've struggled a little bit these last two games. We were using the E word to talk about your defense, and you've given up, you know, 40 and 31, which it should have been more than 31 these last two games. Now you're going against the most explosive offense in the country. What is that going to look like? Are you going to stand tall, flex your muscles? Maybe. It's so interesting to see the inconsistencies of when people decide to really play well. But I cannot wait to watch that game, Kelly.
That game is going to be great. North Carolina, Notre Dame, the Thanksgiving rivalry we didn't
That's
know
right.
we needed. It's going to be
excellent.
First
time Sam Howell's ever played those guys. So there's going to be a lot of fun things around that game. It's going to be really fun to talk about.
Definitely. Our next game in the Big Three was Miami, Virginia Tech, number 9, Miami, now number 12, defeats Virginia Tech 25-24. This, I thought Miami was going to lose this game for most of it because Hendon Hooker played well, and that Virginia Tech defense was getting in the backfield so much. I was yelling at De'Aaron King's O-line so much throughout this game because they just weren't helping him. But Miami escapes, and I know you want to give a lot of credit for to Miami for just finding a way to win.
Yeah, absolutely. A game that I thought they would have lost if it was a year ago. And without De'Aaron King, I don't think they win that game. I think his leadership, his maturity has raised the bar for everybody around him. And you see a team that will fight until the very end, until there's 0 seconds left on the clock. But, you know, I do find it interesting, you know, the farther we get into this season, the better defenses, I guess, personnel-wise. I know Virginia Tech's defense is awful, but when you look at who they have and just players on the field, the more and more we're starting to see this Miami offensive line is not what we might have thought it was early in the season. As so many people ask me, that, you know, they're improved, they look better. They have a tackle transfer in from Houston, instant upgrade, you know, all this different stuff. And I said, let's pump the brakes on that just a little bit. De'Aaron King is making these guys look really good, and his escapability, his just, again, similar to Ian Book, a guy that can extend plays with his legs, he's making these guys look really good. So let's wait and see when they actually play a defense that is known for getting after the quarterback. And we've seen that, you know, the last 3 or 4 weeks here where he just is getting hit and running for his life. So they're going to have to pick it up just to finish this season out. You're 7-1. You're 12 in the country somehow. Let's wait for the real poll to come out. And you know, you still have some goals in front of you. Now you need some help, but you still have a possible shot at going to the ACC championship. And then who knows where it is from there. So interestingly enough, you know, really liked what we saw from Miami, getting a little bit of the ground game. It was good to see Cameron Harris get back involved, 14 carries. I know he only had 63 yards, but at least the reps were there, and you know, not questioning if he was hurt or anything of that nature. And then De'Aaron King, still a solid game all around. His average was a little bit down, you know, whether that was play calling, whether what things were being given to you as an offense, you know, because a week ago he was averaging close to 20 yards of completion. So a little bit different there. But really the biggest thing for me, and we talked about this Friday, Kelly, was the defense that steps up is going to be the team that wins the game. And that's ultimately what happened with Miami getting in the backfield, sacking Hendon Hooker, had 6 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, held Virginia Tech to 120 rushing yards under their average. So really, that was the difference in the game. That's why they ultimately won the game.
Where does Virginia Tech go from here? Because I've seen some stuff on Twitter, some negativity from Virginia Tech fans. If we have any listening, they can probably co-sign that. I think Virginia Tech fans are just not in a good place right now with their program.
It's tough for me to discuss, but I have seen so many people just saying we need a change. And this is a sinking ship, fair to say. You know, I don't know. I thought this was going to be Virginia Tech's best team that they had ever had underneath Fuente and Bornpor. Is that the best that we can do when it's your guys? Now, I know we had great success early. That wasn't your team. You were just, you know, driving the car.
Right.
This is your car.
Right.
This is your boat. So it's really interesting to me. They finish off with Pitt, Clemson, and then your rival, which just beat you and snapped a crazy, crazy streak. So there's going to be more motivation there for them to continue that. I don't know, Kelly. I think that it's an interesting finish to the season. If you win one of those, maybe you feel better. If you win two of them, you feel great. It's going to be a very interesting finish for Virginia Tech.
That's a tough stretch, those final three. And what's sad is that what everyone's going to remember is that they lost to Liberty. And that's what a lot of fans can't let go of. And I get it, because it's an in-state group of five, and that hurts. But Liberty's pretty good. You know, it
undefeated in the ACC, and they're playing NC State this week.
Yeah. It doesn't excuse it, but I don't know. I think we can approach that with a little more rational thought. But then again, they call fans fanatics for a reason.
Losing to ODU, and I get it. Losing to Liberty within 2 years of each other, that's tough.
I get the frustration for Virginia Tech fans. Let's talk about Wake and North Carolina.
Best game of the
year. North Carolina beats Wake 59-53. This was your dream of a football game.
It 100% was. It had 100,000 points, 200,000 yards, no turnovers. There was one turnover, which should have been a touchdown, so even more points. Just an amazing play by Wake's defense to rip that ball out. Little bit interesting call there. You know, normally tie goes to the receiver. So that was a game-changing play, so you thought. But, you know, what a great effort by both teams. And again, not to just, you know, keep bringing up how right I am all the time, because that's very rare for me. But if you go back to the Friday's podcast, this turns into a shootout. I don't know if Wake Forest can keep up. And that's exactly what happened. They just ran out of gas on offense. You know, they were scoring really, really well at a high clip. Fourth quarter, only 8 points. Fourth quarter for UNC, 28 points. And that just goes to show you the difference in offenses and just the firepower, the depth. UNC is just absolutely loaded everywhere. And for Sam Howell to put up half a 100 yards, 7 total touchdowns, was just truly amazing and a great effort. You know, Wake Forest is a really good team, and I don't think gets enough national attention. And now losing this game, you're not going to unless you run the table for the rest of the season. But they're solid. And you think of who they have coming back. This is a very young team, Kelly. So I think if you're a Wake Forest fan, if you're paying attention to Wake, you've got to be excited moving forward for a couple of years to come now. North Carolina, similar to Miami, that you might still have a shot, to go to the ACC championship. You play Miami. You play Notre Dame. So if you beat both of those, and maybe with a little extra help, you know, you can find your way into that thing. So there's still some things out in front of North Carolina that, you know, I think they should really be playing inspired football and be excited to finish out this season.
One thing that really stood out to me in that game, there were a lot, because that game was super entertaining. I thought wide receiver play in that game was tremendous. Dudes were making plays all over the field, just mossing guys left and right on both sides for Wake and North Carolina.
Can I hit you with some numbers real quick?
Ooh,
19
yes.
yard average, 20 yard average, 15 yard average, 29 yard average, 13 yard average, 14, 21, 12, 10. That's the top 10 receivers, 5 on each side. I mean, those guys were balling. You're absolutely right, Kelly. They were making crazy catches, running after the catch, the yak, if you want to call it. Just a really, really solid performance. And I hope all of them don't go to the NFL, but they could. With Wake, they're all young guys. They're all like redshirt freshmen or true freshmen. And they've got, you know, 2, 3, 4 more years at Wake Forest. So it's really cool to see them kind of have a coming out party. One guy in Robeson with 167 yards. Green, who the coaching staff, when I called that game, said, we need him to step up. 8 catches, 170 yards.
He really stood out to me. He's a guy that I remember from that game.
And it's fun to see that, because you love to see guys develop. That's why we love this sport, love every sport, to just see people grow up, make big plays, and just see progress. That's what's so pure about the college game and Wake Forest grow up right before our eyes.
We are. And I think Wake still can accomplish a lot this season. That would have been a huge momentum boost for them. I don't think either of those defenses are, and Wake's defense has actually been pretty good this year, but I don't think either of them are to the point where, oh yeah, they gave up 59, 53. We get that. I just think both offenses were clicking on a different level in that game. So I still understand, yes, the main issue with North Carolina, we want to see more defense. But both those offenses, both those offensive coordinators, both those quarterbacks were bringing it on Saturday. And we have to acknowledge that a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. And just at the high level of execution, that's an important thing. Again, you know, doing some of those plays, throwing some of those passes is impressive on air. Then you add a body or two bodies surrounding your guys. It was very, very good quarterback play, great protection. Both offensive lines played really well. So I think you've got to give more credit to the offenses than saying, yeah, our defense stunk. They had a bunch of MAs, because I just don't think that's true. I think it was just better play by each offense.
I agree. And you can look at how many times DBs were mossed. Look,
yeah, exactly.
The DB's there. It's not like you had guys just running wide open
all
the time.
Just a better play than you were able to make.
Yeah. Okay, this game, two games that were in our speed round that we should hit on quickly here. Speed round. One game that our very own Eric McLean called. Virginia 31. Louisville 17. Louisville has just, they've been a disappointment. There's no other way around it. But they had a bunch of guys out for that game. So you called this one with your own two eyes, Mac. What did you see?
Yeah, not a lot. No, it was interesting enough when we found out no Javian Hawkins, no Tutu Atwell. I thought it was over. I thought it wasn't even going to be competitive. You know, Virginia's defense was going to shut these guys down. They have no playmakers on the outside, outside of one guy. It's easy to target, double team, have a safety over the top, Fitzpatrick, and then just contain a quarterback. And great game plan. Easy enough. Not the case. You know, Mikhail Cunningham went berserk, nearly 200 yards rushing, two touchdowns, averaged close to 10 yards per carry, and really, you know, willed his team into it and outgained them, put them in great positions. But the name of the game here was turnovers. They turned the ball over. It seemed every big drive, every time they were getting in close to the end zone, it was just unfortunate turnovers. One, a pick six by a freaky linebacker, Noah Taylor, who, you know, just housed it for 82, 83 yards, the longest interception return ever for UVA. So there were a lot of things that could have changed. And now Louisville has turned the ball over 18 times in their 7-8 games. It's very hard to win when you're turning over the ball at that rate. And Virginia did a great job, you know, taking advantage of it. You see the stats, not that impressive, only 368 yards. But it was because they got the ball in great opportune spots and they took advantage of it. They came away with points. And you know, I think they're a different team with Brennan Armstrong. It's funny how we keep talking, you know, on a lot of different platforms about Bryce Perkins and what he meant to this team. They're more similar than they are different. And the things that they can do for their team, the way that they are competitors, how they can use their legs to really, you know, overemphasize and take advantage of if you look away from the quarterback. So I'm very impressed with Brennan. I think he's a guy that going into next year, we're going to be saying, hey, look out for this guy on your list, on your dark horse list, whatever it is. He can really step up and make some plays because, again, they have a younger receiving core, especially with Larrell Davis, 6'7". Dude's open anytime he wants it at wide receiver. So I was impressed with them. The defense did enough, kind of that bend don't break that I spoke about with UNC. So just, you know, they did enough to stay in the game. The turnovers really helped. And Virginia, as frustrating as it is, where you are because of injury and maybe what your record is, I think you're feeling good about this team. And talking with Coach Mendenhall, he said, hey, look, we are similar to Wake Forest, what I heard from them. We are a developmental program. We value time together, working with each other, spring, summer, building leadership, building great players. He a little bit more so. He looks at football at a very different light where you have to earn your number. He wishes everybody had to earn a scholarship. Like he looks at it from a very different way than most people do. So that's important. And he's saying, hey, look, we're developing and coming together as a team when it matters most and when we could possibly lose or win. And you're starting to see them get better and better and a great win against Virginia or against UNC, now a great win against Louisville. So it's interesting about that team moving forward.
And they've been so much better when they're healthy. So that's an easy correlation to make with Virginia. All right, Mac. Last game. And we're going to have, speaking of Florida State, we're going to have EJ Manuel on the Wednesday podcast. I'm not sure if we said that in our intro.
This is breaking news right now. You just told everybody.
Breaking news. EJ Manuel, Mac's bestie. We actually already recorded it with him, just a little heads up, but he was awesome. So you guys are going to want to listen to that. And this is Florida State Clemson week. It doesn't really feel like it, Mac, because FSU went to Raleigh. No, FSU went to Raleigh and got shellacked. I think the score is actually looks better than the game was. 38-22, NC State wins. Good win for NC State. Bailey Hawkman looked really good. Florida State is...
Big wolf. Big wolf.
I'm running out of words
to how to describe FSU. It's a problem, and it's something that needs to be addressed. There's a lot of things that need fixed, and EJ will tell you about it. So come back Wednesday. You'll hear about it, hear it from his perspective. And it's interesting to hear what he has to say. But looking at this game, you're absolutely right. NC State could have scored 60, 70 points if they wanted to. They absolutely pulled the dogs off. And then again, at the end of the game, Florida State not quitting, which is great to see. Go fight. Go fight, guys. We're proud of you. You know, scoring 13 points at the end of the game there. I think there is a nice future with Purdy at quarterback for Florida State. You know, I think there's, you know, some signs of life there. Will be interesting to see. But there's a lot of pieces that need to be added to that roster. But NC State finding a way to win, a very resilient team. And you know, looking at where they are right now, 5-3, and putting together a really nice season in a season that I didn't think we could expect much from them. And so they keep proving us wrong. They're doing a really good job. It's going to be fun to see this team continue to grow and finish strong.
Kind of like the health situation with UVA, right? We know they don't have Devin Leary, but they had Devin Leary at the beginning of the year. And overall, they've been a lot healthier than last year. So I think if you're an NC State fan, you take a lot of positives from this season. You look ahead to next year when you get Leary back, hopefully, and you get Bam, Zonovan Knight back, and you can build off of that. So this was always going to be a weird year, but it's good for Doran to show, look, last year really was about injuries, because coaches right. say that. And sometimes you're thinking, I'm not sure, but I'm starting to believe that.
He's
more
proven
and more.
It. And a guy that wins 9-10 games like it's nothing. You know, interesting enough for people to really understand what that meant and just how badly that team was banged up, you know, a year ago.
It's Clemson Florida State week, which used to be a big deal in the ACC. We're still going to make it a big deal this week. So as we've said, EJ Manuel's coming on Wednesday. We'll talk and preview the game on Friday. Maybe we'll get some of Emac's best memories, possibly.
There's not many
from,
when I was playing
Clemson,
Florida
State.
Because they were still really good.
There's a few. Maybe 2015 would stand out. So we're excited to break that down. And we're excited to break down Clemson FSU maybe in years to come when it means a little more than it
no
does
doubt about
this
it.
Week.
Guys, thanks for listening. It was a great weekend. Look forward to another one coming up. And like Kelly said, a great guest Wednesday on the episode. You're not going to want to miss it. If you haven't already, guys, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop a little 5-star rating. We'd greatly appreciate that. And until next time, we'll see y'all.